This is the John Clayton Show.
Brought to you by Coors Light, the world's most refreshing beer.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's get going with some headlines. Well, Mariners get the victory last night in a game that was pretty one-sided. It was a strange one in the sense that Gene Segura was benched in the third inning for not running out a play, and so that's not good, but they were able to get the victory, and of course, they're up to 87 wins. It was a 12-6 victory over the Rangers. There's two more games remaining right now in the series, and of course, in the season, Robinson Cano had four hits, Cameron Maven had four RBIs, so a victory that gets them up to 87. Unfortunately, no playoffs, but then, hey, they've known that now for some time. That just slipped away. In the National Football League, Doug Baldwin looks like he is going to be able to come back from his knee injury. He's been cleared. He's listed as questionable, but looks like he's going to be able to go. Ethan Posick's going to be out. J.R. Squeezy starts for him. They don't have Rasheem Green. He's a scratch. Let's go some college football scores. Alabama blowing out Louisiana 35-0. It's Texas A&M 17, Arkansas 7. Indiana in the second quarter leading Rutgers 14-7. It's Oklahoma 21, Kansas 7. Temple is leading Boston College 14-13. It's Syracuse trailing Clemson 7-6. Georgia Tech 21, Bowling Green 10. And West Virginia leading Texas Tech 28-7. And those are our headlines. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Joining us right now is Dave Grosby. And David, how are you on this Saturday?
I'm doing all right, John. How are you doing?
Doing good. Still fighting a little bit of a cold. I still can't figure out if this is a continuation of the cold that I had last month. I can't remember a time where I've known of so many people that had lingering colds forever. It seems like.
Well, I'm glad we're on the phone because I don't need to catch a cold.
No, you definitely don't need that. I mean, because you're back to being healthy, and that's where we like you to be. Speaking about not healthy, how do you read the play? I guess, yesterday was a 12-6 victory for the Mariners. That gets them up to 87 wins. But Gene Segura, they benched him early because he just didn't run out of play well.
Yeah, I mean, that's a guy that they, was in theory part of their core, a guy they committed to, gave him a contract, a guy who's hitting .301 on the season. He's had a real good season, but has been involved in the incident with D. Gordon, the fight in the clubhouse. He's been identified as the other guy involved in that. And now this, and Scott Service making the point, even though the Mariners were in the midst of a big inning and then wound up rolling to victory in that game, made it a point of benching him. So he now becomes another decision in the offseason. Do they want to keep moving forward with him? Do they view this as a real issue? There's always the possibility there have been other issues like this off the field. At the same time, the guy had a great moment in the All-Star game. He's put together a great season. So much like everything with the Mariners, nothing is as easy as it seems, I suppose, John.
No, and of course, I mean, what you're looking at where you have Felix Hernandez, who you have to bring back because nobody's going to pick up that contract in a trade, now making over $27 million next year. And Gene Segura, I mean, he's a very good player, all-star caliber player, a good hitter, 300 hitter, and he has an affordable contract. You wonder, is that going to be something that they might consider trading, or is he too valuable to the team that you wouldn't trade him?
That's the exact question right there. I mean, it all goes down to the, evaluation of the season. The Mariners are likely going to win 88 or 89 games this year. And there's going to be some sentiment to break the whole thing up, even though that's a real good season in the most part for most teams would be close to 90 wins, which is where they've been at. But they've been yo-yoing up and down in this neighborhood for a bunch of years now. And in the case of Segura, that just is a metaphor for what the Mariners are. I mean, when you look at something that's really good, there are some questions about it. There's no question that if they wanted to rebuild in certain areas, they wanted to add a starting pitcher, et cetera, that Segura would be a very good trade piece. He is signed to a relatively friendly contract. The team signed him to that, but then if they traded for him. So I'm going to say, John, that in my heart of hearts, my gut, I should say, I think the Mariners are going to keep Segura, and he's one of the guys they build around, but he's going to have to clean up his act a little bit, it seems.
Yeah, no question. I think that is going to be one of the things that is going to be, you know, very big on the agenda. And of course, season concluding, and it looks like, you know, they're going to max out 88, at the most 89 wins, which, you know, far exceeds expectations. But then when you look at that minus 37 as far as the run differential, I mean, it's a 88-89 win team. They won a game or two here at the end, yet it really performed like a 78 win team.
Well, and they did perform that way for the last 100 games, too. I mean, this year for the Mariners was about one thing and one thing only, and they said it at the start of the year, and it was never a secret to anyone. It's about making the postseason. This would have been a successful year. I've said this a million times for the Mariners if they won 79 games and made the postseason, and it's a non-successful year if they win 90 and don't make it. And then, look, the way it played out is another thing that's really disappointing now. The A's got hot and stayed hot, and that's understood. The Mariners would have had to play good baseball to maintain their spot, but they're in a position to do so. They're 21 games over 500, or 24 games over 500, and we're in a true position to you know, play a little bit better than 500 ball the rest of the way, and you know, lock up a playoff spot. Instead, it doesn't happen. Instead, they blow an 11 game lead. They do it in about 2 months, and September arrives. They're not even in the race anymore. Now, again, credit to the A's for being spectacular. They really did have a spectacular season. But from the Mariners' standpoint, it just makes it different that here was a circumstance where you were really, you know, in command of a playoff spot. It's not just, you know, the other team won more games than you did and you were chasing them all year. Although we'd have a different perspective if the thing was switched and the Mariners started out 42 and 48 and then won 45 of the last 69 games. But that wasn't the case. So it's just, you know, at the end of the day, John, to cut through it all, it winds up being a very difficult year for Jerry DePoto, as he has said on this show. He said on the air that, you know, his view of the Mariners is that they're in the giant middle class, as it were, and that's not a good place to be, because you look at the top teams in Major League Baseball, in the American League, and you can make a decent case for most of them being in the same situation next year. I mean, there's no reason why the Astros, who are still building around a young core, aren't going to be as good next year, and they are 100-game winners again this year than they will be last year. The Indians, even though they're not winning at a same clip as teams in the East and the West, there's no reason to think that they're going to slip much. The Yankees are here to stay, and they might win 100 games to finish second. The Red Sox won 107 games, and the A's are going to lose Josh Donaldson, another player too. But, I mean, that's where the battle's going to be. I mean, once again, next year, unless you can do something dramatic, you're looking at fighting for the second wild card spot. And that's with a payroll of over $150 million. So it's going to be – we've talked about it, John, on Saturdays in the past, as the season kind of spun out of control, that this is going to be a very difficult offseason for the Mariners because they do not have a farm system that's up and ready to produce top prospects yet. The only way they can get better is by trading – or by getting free agents, and they don't have a whole lot to trade, and they've already spending a lot of money on free agents as it is. So their first decision is what they're going to do with Nelson Cruz, of course, but that's just the first of many, many difficult decisions they've got to make in this offseason.
Yeah, it's not going to be easy, and a lot of drama. So once we get to November, it's going to be strange. So how do you kind of look at the whole baseball season itself, league-wide? Good year or bad year?
Go ahead, John.
Was it a good year or a bad year for baseball? Yeah, for baseball.
Oh, I think it's a good year for baseball. Any year that you have the Red Sox, the Yankees, you have the Dodgers in all likelihood, and the Cubs already clinching in the postseason, that bodes well for ratings right there. I think, you know, the game itself has issues. You know, the being the slavish desire to sabermetrics has changed the game. You know, you got a game of shifts now. You got a game where guys strike out all the time now. You know, it used to be a badge of shame to strike out. Now, guys routinely strike out 150 to 200 times a year, and you don't think twice about it. Top players do that. So the game itself is in good shape because the teams that are good. But you know, I still think it needs some adjustments. I mean, you look around and look, baseball is successful, mainly because of the fact that cable TV and whatnot, you know, needs live programming, and baseball provides the most live programming. So a ton of teams have got nine-figure deals for their broadcasts, including the Mariners. which is masking the fact that you got a lot of teams that aren't drawing fans very well. And in particular, in the month of September, or teams that are out of the race, or even teams, I mean, the Mariners are playing well, and look what they're drawing. I mean, they're just not keeping anyone's interest. So I don't think that it's a big concern for baseball at the moment, because baseball's flush with cash with all the separate television deals. And the postseason ratings, I think, will be fine, because, you know, even for the teams that aren't huge markets, and Houston is included in that huge market team, you got compelling stories in Cleveland, Atlanta getting back in for the first time. You really got it covered. Even though it's a regional sport, you've got every region of the country pretty well covered for the upcoming postseason, except for the Northwest, of course.
How do you address the idea to the Mariner fans who say that they need to break it down and build it back up, you know, the tanking it type prospect? Because my position is that it's not a wise thing to do at this moment, because now you have more teams tanking and less pitching that's going to be available you can pick up. And I think that what's a 5-year cycle for Houston, Chicago, and other teams now could be 6 to 7 years, with more teams maybe not succeeding in those 6 to 7 years of rebuilding.
I'm not a big fan of it, and in particular from the Mariners. I mean, look, there are teams that had terrible records this year that weren't tanking. That's the other thing. I mean, the Orioles plan in the offseason, they got a $100 million payroll. They lost 113 games this year. They're not a tanking team. The Royals, they've been in the postseason for the past couple of years, lost a couple of their stars, kept a couple, but they had a lousy year. The Rangers had a lousy year. You don't have to tank to have a bad year, but, you know, in terms of building a team, that's become a philosophy. The problem for the Mariners is that philosophy starts with the farm system, and their farm system is considered basically barren. I mean, they've got some prospects in there, as every farm system does. It's all a matter of, you know, they've got hundreds of players down there, and some of whom may pan out, but none of them are highly touted right now. So you're starting from scratch there. You don't have young players to bring up and suffer, you know, the slings and arrows with, like the Houstons did and teams like that did. You also at the point where we've talked about it, the Mariners are 18 years now into a playoff drought, the longest drought in professional sports, and you're going to tell your fan base that it's going to be another 5 or 6 years before we're tearing it down. It's going to be 5 or 6 years before we think we might be able to compete again. You know, I just don't think that the Mariners are in a situation to do that. I just don't. Even though I don't necessarily think it's the right thing to do either. There's some who do, I do not. But they're just not in a position to do it, John, if they want to keep their fan base happy. I just don't see it. I mean, Safeco Field is a great place to go. People go in the summer, whether or not they're winning or losing. It's not quite the Cubs deal, but it's close to it. When the Yankees come in, you'll have big crowds. The Red Sox come in and the Blue Jays come in, you'll have big crowds with other teams' fans rooting for them. But, you know, I just think from the Mariners' standpoint and their ownership standpoint, you know, you're investing $150 million into this team right now. You just can't tear it down and start over. You just can't do it.
Yes, I agree with you 100%. Now, on the football side of it, I guess the best news for the Seahawks is that Doug Baldwin looks like he's going to be back in the lineup tomorrow against Arizona.
Well, it's huge good news. The guy that Russell Wilson trusts more than any other in a game where, look, Arizona's 0-3 and they're playing a rookie quarterback, but this is the NFL and strange things happen. And one thing we do know is that their defensive style is going to be to attack, to blitz a lot, to put a lot of pressure on Russell Wilson. So to have his security blanket, as it were, back, to have the guy that he feels most comfortable throwing to back, I don't think can be overstated. You know, Doug Baldwin also, I think you were throwing the numbers out, is the most reliable receiver in the NFL, basically. I mean, when you throw to him, he catches the ball. When you throw at him, he catches the ball, period. So that just is a big positive, and it's been a significant miss for the Seahawks on offense so far this year, as Russell Wilson's tried to get used to some other receivers. And look, Tyler Lockett has done a nice job and has made some big plays, but none of the guys have the kind of connection to Russell Wilson that Doug Baldwin has.
Now, can you figure, you get about 6 catches from him, and that 60% starts to get to 63, 64%. You start to get maybe, you know, a little bit more rhythm type of throws, you know, because I think that, they made the commitment to the run last week. I still think that, and they mixed a little of this in, but I think they can mix a little bit more when Doug Baldwin comes back, you know, go a little bit of fast pace, quick tempo, and no huddle, and then you get the ball to Baldwin and spread it around to the other guys.
Exactly. And, you know, I mean, one thing that would be nice to do would be to get off to a fast start. I mean, that hasn't really, what is it now, 32 games since the Mariners have scored a touchdown on their opening drive, just the Mariners. The Seahawks have scored a touchdown on their opening drive, just an astonishing stat when you think about it. That's almost two full years of not scoring a touchdown. So, you know, Arizona, like we said, are 0-3, playing a rookie quarterback. You get the sense that they're a team that if they go down big early, that it'd be tough for them to come back. I mean, they took it early. They took a 2-touchdown lead over the Bears last week and wound up giving it up at home. So they're not a team playing with a lot of confidence. And I just get the feeling that if the Seahawks can jump them early, this could be an easy game. If they don't, the Cardinals are a wounded animal. I mean, every team plays hard in the NFL, you know, when they feel they got a chance. And in particular, no one wants that winless thing happening. So you don't want to give them a break if you can avoid it. And it'll be a challenge. I think it's going to be a low-scoring game, but I do, you know, think that on paper the Seahawks should certainly win it.
No question. So what's on Dave Grosby's schedule today?
Going to take in a Mariner game and enjoy college football.
Yep, can't get any better than that. Of course, I guess this is the next-to-last Mariner game you can catch. I hope you enjoy it. And, Dave, thanks for joining us.
Thanks, John.
All right, Dave Grosby. Of course, Bob Gross and Tom, weekdays 12 to 3 here on 710 ESPN Seattle. Give us a call at 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. The John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, more John Clayton on 710 ESPN Seattle and 710sports.com.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Tara in Mercer Island. Tara, how are you today?
I'm great. How are you?
Very good. You feel better about last week's game?
Yeah, I feel really good about the last week's game. I think they did a good job clicking on all cylinders. There's been some critiques about Ken Norton and Brian Schottenheimer. Hiring, but I don't see what's wrong with them. If you think about it, I like how Ken Norton thinks of creative ways how to blitz different quarterbacks. And on the Schottenheimer side, I think it's the fourth week in the season, and usually defenses are a little bit ahead of the offense. And last week, Russell showed what he was made of by getting rid of it a little bit earlier. So I think their adjustments are really good. What do you think?
No, I agree. I think that, what I credit both those guys for is that you think about the number of adjustments that they've had to make. I mean, for example, here you're trying to call plays for Russell Wilson, and with Doug Baldwin missing most of the first three games, you only had like one receiver, Tyler Lockett, that really was in sync with Russell Wilson, because just about everything else is new, along with a new tight end, and Will Disley, and Nick Vanette, who was a third tight end, moving up into the number two spot. So you really don't have a lot of continuity, and probably if you're Russell Wilson, you don't have complete confidence in the receiving core. Then you have the changes and the problems on the offensive line. You open the season with two pretty good defenses. I think that's pretty evident. And so you look on the defensive side of it. I mean, think of what Ken Norton has had to do, you know, with the linebacking core. He has one game without Bobby Wagner and KJ Wright. He has to take Michael Kendricks with like no practice and get him ready to start at weak side linebacker, and then take Austin Calitro and get his first start. And where you've talked to Calitro, you talk to Kendricks, and what they tell you is that, hey, having a linebacker coach as your defensive coordinator, he can make the adjustments better for those two positions, that and it makes it easier for them to go and do those things. And so, no, I think that Ken Norton's off to a good start, and yes, last week was a good turnaround for Brian Schottenheimer.
Do you think they can sustain it against good teams? Like, maybe, here's what I'm thinking. For the Cardinals, I think they need to come out like they did against the Cowboys. But I'm more a little bit concerned about the Rams. Do you think they can sustain their success against
Yeah, I think you take one step at a time. I mean, you take care of the Arizona game, because now you win the road game in Arizona. You have a good chance, particularly with Jimmy Garoppolo and Jerick McKinnon down in San Francisco, of getting four wins in the division from those two teams. And now it's a matter, you're home, and you have to find a way to reverse what happened last year when the Rams came in and absolutely blew this team out. And so, the fact that the first game's going to be at home, because now, you have the advantage. You get a road game against Arizona with a win. Then, I mean, it's going to be tough against the Rams. They're that good. I mean, they look fantastic. But, I mean, you now have, you've had two games going up against the Sean McVay defense or offense. You now have had, more time with your defense. You should have KJ Wright next week. And as long as you come out of the Arizona game healthy, then I think that you have a chance. But it's not going to be easy.
I'm a little bit concerned about their running game against Arizona. Do you think Chris Carson will play?
Yes, I do. I know he's banged up with a hip injury, but I do think he is going to be able to play. There seems to be the optimism. I know it's a question mark. He's, questionable game time decision, but I think odds are pointing that he is going to be able to play.
Thank you for taking my call.
Thank you, Tara. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Victor in Bremerton. Hey, Victor.
Hey, John. Just wanted to say love the show and
thank you.
Positive and healing vibes to you and your wife.
Thank you.
I had a question about the Mariners farm system. Do you think there's any way of upgrading it, or is it the scouts? I just wanted to get your take on our farm system, because it just seems like we're getting all these trades and free agents.
Yeah.
And we're not bringing anybody up from home.
Well, because again, it just takes time. I mean, when, because you can see the strategy that Jerry DePoto has, and, his mission, which you can say in many of these trades has been successful. I mean, he was going to have to give away some of the top remaining prospects to try to upgrade the major league roster. And so being able to pick up, all-star type players like now Mitch Haniger and Gene Segura and, picking up the D. Gordons and picking up the Alex Colomés. I mean, it was going to cost them prospects. And the one thing that he does is he also tries to get in the international market. And of course, in the international market, he'll take a guy and, be 16, 17 years old, and he may have to give him away in a trade to upgrade things. And so first, he tries to build the major league roster better, and say what you want. I mean, I know it's minus 37 as far as the run differential, but they won 87 games. Wasn't good enough for the playoffs, but that worked. All right. Secondly, they have now tried to build a farm system in AAA where if you need to, you can have some pitchers that can come up on moment's notice and at least try to give you a decent start. You have three or four pitchers like that. So I think you can see the smarts of all that. But yes, it did cost the prospects. It did cost the international prospects. And of course, you're relying on the draft. You get you get Kyle Lewis, and he gets a knee injury, so that kind of sets him back, but he's making progress. Evan White looks like, he can be pretty decent down the line, but, when you're taking a player in the draft, it's going to take 3 to 4 years before he's going to be up. And of course, Jerry DePoto has not been here more than the 3 years, so it's like, okay, it's just going to take a little bit of time, and then, he's going to have to continue to draft well to continue to build.
Right on. And I just one more question. I see Felix and Kyle Seager catching a lot of flack on social media, not playing up to their money. What's your take on that?
Well, it's the truth. I mean, when you're paying $27 million, 5.55 earn run average is not what you're getting in return. And that's the unfortunate part, because, his fastball, which, was 94, 95, now is down to in the high 80s. And, he's not the same pitcher as he was. But what can you do? I mean, the contract's untradeable. So you have to kind of live with that. And in the case of Kyle Seager, you just have to hope this was just a bad year. I'm sure there's going to be a lot of consternation this off season as far as, is he going to be traded or is he not going to be traded? Making $14 million and batting like he's batting, that's going to be hard to get true value for it. So, he's had a good year fielding. He has made a lot of key hits during the year, but unfortunately, he's not living up, at least this year, to that $14 million a year contract.
Well, thanks for taking my call, John. Much love to you and yours.
Hey, thank you so much. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. It's the John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle and 710sports.com.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Rashid in Bothell. Hey, Rashid.
Good morning, Professor. How are you?
I'm doing well. How about you?
I'm fine, fine. First of all, congratulations on the new launch tomorrow, on Monday.
Oh, thank you.
So I am so excited because I've actually been, like, I've been listening to Matt Williamson for, like, now 10 years now since he was on ESPN. But a great, great football mind and a very good analyst. But you got to talk to him. He's so low on Seattle this year. You got to get him on the show and explain, like, why. And, like, I'm so excited and wish you all the best there for that venture. I'm sure it's going to rock.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah. And, Professor, I was watching the Rams, and I've actually watched a bunch of their games, and they look scary because what they are doing right now is, like, they're doing so well in the first couple of quarters and then using Gurley and Aaron Donald and stuff in the end, and, like, they're just kind of playing the games that Seattle was playing in 2013, just, like, killing people in the beginning and then, like, just icing the game with Marshawn Lynch and the defense and stuff. And if you see, they haven't used Gurley that much. Gurley, and they want to save him for the remainder of the season and stuff. So I think we've just seen the surface, and I think they are they are the best team, and really, I'm so impressed with Sean McVay and what he's doing with that team.
Oh, I agree. And, you know, they're just seemingly, they're so far ahead. Now, again, I'm not saying way ahead as far as the way that the play calling is, because you're seeing similar things. You know, at least last year you saw it from Doug Peterson in Philadelphia. I mean, you're seeing it a little bit to a minor degree with Matt Nagy. You're definitely seeing it in Kansas City with Patrick Mahomes and Andy Reid. But, I mean, you're seeing advanced play calling, and you're seeing all the trickery, you know, the fake deceptions, the jet sweeps, you name it, and it all seems to be working so well. So, you know, really, really impressed with that. And now it's just a matter, it's like, how do you try to stop it? It's not easy to stop, that's for sure.
Yeah, but Professor, I was at the game on Sunday last week, and I really saw, I think, the Seattle team that Pete wants to run and everything, and I'm sure he's happy. And kudos to, you know, I was so skeptical of Ken Norton Jr., but I mean, if you look at it, our defense is playing lights out and stuff. And once Russell gets on board with some of these receivers, and if you have, like, a healthy offensive line and the running backs in rotation and stuff, I think Seattle can contend for a wild card. And especially with the 49ers, their season's going to go down the drain. So I think if we can get to nine wins in the NFC might get you a wild card.
Yeah, because, I mean, what you're looking at is kind of like what I forecast, because, you know, arguably, and of course it's changed now because of injuries, suspensions, and things like that, but 14 of the top 20 quarterbacks are in the NFC. And so when you think about it, the two that aren't in that group are Sam Bradford, who's already been benched, and Mitch Trubisky, who's not the same after the first scripted series, you know, the first two possessions, 15, 16, 17 plays. And so that means you're playing a good quarterback every week, and a good quarterback can just carve you apart. I mean, and so you've seen that as far as, you know, the different kind of maturations. And so, you know, that, I think, pulls everybody down. Now, the Rams are topping everybody, and so you just have to ride with them. But, no, I think that, you know, I mean, you can maybe see in this conference, I mean, you look in the NFC South and you look at the struggles that they're having right now, that there's a good chance that, you know, each of they start knocking each other out, because you got four teams competing for the playoffs in the NFC South. And so that could take the wild card down to nine games. And that I agree with.
Yeah, and lastly, Professor, so I was, you know, there's been a lot of talk about, like, Brady not being happy and all that, like, with the lack of weapons. And but, Professor, this is week three, and he was playing inside in the dome and stuff. And, you know, Father Time is unbeaten and stuff. And, like, some of his throws, I don't think he can make a lot of those throws that he could make. And he started to look old. Very reminiscent of, like, Brett Favre's 2010 season, where you know, he came up of an almost an MVP season in 2009, and like all of a sudden, he started to look old and stuff. And of course, the lack of weapons is not helping the situation. But I started noticing little chinks in the armor, not as, like in terms of like the relationship, but also like I think Brady's play has not been stellar this season, and that must be concerning, and they have no backup plan. Like, I don't know what they do after this year.
Yeah, they got Brian Hoyer, and that's not great. it's not Jimmy Garoppolo, but that's all they have right now. But, yeah, I'm not writing off Brady. I mean, too many people have done that, and, I mean, last I checked, he was the MVP last year. So, yeah, we'll see how that drop-off is. But when you don't have anybody to throw to, you don't have anybody to throw to, and that's the case right now. So, yeah, I'd wait till Edelman gets back before we start making judgments on Brady and where he is, because he's still pretty good, but there's got to be some concerns about this team. And I was just looking at it, you know, where's the problems? I mean, you know, think about this. They only have four draft choices that from the last two drafts that are on the active roster. Two last year, two this year. Four. And it's like and five that are on injured reserve from this year's draft. That's not good.
Yeah. Yeah, Professor. But, Professor, good luck with your venture, and you have a great weekend. And safe travels to Arizona, sir.
Hey, thank you so much. And, of course, what it has is Clayton football that starts coming up on Monday. Looking forward to that launch. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Sam in Renton. Hey, Sam.
Yeah, hi, Mr. Clayton. Tomorrow's game, so Chris Clemson, is he confirmed out? Or is he...
No, he's questionable, but I think that it's on the positive side of questionable. So hip injury, it'll be a game-time decision, but I think he's going to be able to play.
Okay, but you're talking about... I'm just talking about DJ Poulsen's yesterday and you pulled his injury. It sounds like you're... Is the Seahawks... Are they getting to play with this... Are they playing this guy? Can they get someone else that can... Running back? They were talking about, you know, running the game, get some... Mm-hmm. Now maybe bring Christy Michael
well,
back.
Well, remember... Here's the scenario that I see, because clearly you have to be disappointed again the fact that he's not able to play. I mean, this is now, because we're 30, so it's like 35 games and he's played 13 of them. I mean, that's not good enough, and you know the talent is there. So my guess would be once you can get J.D. McKissic off the injured reserve list, because you need that fourth running back. I mean, you can see right now, I mean, you know, Rasheed brings up, and you bring up the idea, it's like, okay, is Carson going to play? And you think so, but now you don't want to go into a game with only two healthy running backs, and so, you know, Mike Davis and Rashad Penny. And so, you know, you keep ProSize until J.D. McKissic comes back, and then you contemplate maybe making some kind of a trade then and see if you can get some value, a sixth-round pick, a seventh-round pick. But that's all you're going to be getting. So, you know, it's like you just have to wait and hope that he gets healthy. But now this one is a core injury, so, you know, the abdominal and all that stuff. And so you just shake your head because, you know, every time you need him, you can't have him. So, you know, it's like, and that's got to be frustrating for Pete Carroll, for John Snyder, you name it.
Yeah, I'm just getting tired. Just hearing him on the injury report every week or something.
Every week, yeah. I mean, and again, I mean, how many times has it been a pre-game injury? You know, something that wasn't there on Friday. I mean, you kind of get the idea that, you know, CJ is one that, okay, if I'm 100%, I'm good. But if I'm not 100%, then you better think about sitting me out. And so, and in a game like this, I mean, you're not going to be 100%. I mean, look at Chris Carson. I mean, he had 32 carries last week. He, you know, suffers a hip injury of some sort, misses some practice, but is expected to play. I mean, you got to play through it. And right now, he's not being able to play through it.
Yeah.
Problematic.
Thank you, Mr. Clayton.
Hey, Sam, thank you. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Give us a call. It's the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle and 710sports.com. Now, more John Clayton.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Patrick in Kent. Hey, Patrick.
Hey, good morning, John.
Good morning.
Hey, hope you get well soon.
First oh, thank
of all.
You.
Okay, about the Seahawks, that was a textbook win. Smart football last week. Getting turnovers and getting that running game.
It was what they projected to be. A team that was going to be committed to running the football. A team that was going to be, you know, stingy on defense. A team that has good speed. It's not obviously the 213 defense, but now they put seven pretty good quarters together. So that's encouraging. So, yeah, it was a defining type of game and one that was, you know, 2 weeks overdue.
Yeah. One thing that we would like, what I'd like to see, is improve the running game to 4 yards a carry or more.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, I would agree with that. I mean, it was funny. The one stat that I thought was unusual was that I think ESPN Stats and Info had the first contact on running back, particularly Chris Carson, like about a yard, half a yard behind the line of scrimmage. And Chris Carson was able to gain like about 3.8 after contact. And so that's how he was able to get the 3.2 yard average. And so what that means is, okay, start to win more of the line of scrimmage and push the pile. And make it so the back can hit the hole 1 or 2 yards into the line of scrimmage, or past the line of scrimmage, so it makes it a little bit easier to get those runs.
Okay. One last thing, John. What do you think about the key and rhythm remodel?
I like it. I mean, again, still was a Soto guy. I thought that would be better for location and all that stuff. But I think the one thing is that you can see, and really, having, you know, Chris Hansen on one side and Lywicki on the other, the Lywickis, I mean, you weren't going to lose. Because, I mean, these guys were really good. They care. And, you know, that, I thought, is the real positive thing of this. Because now you can see that not only were they able to push it, were they able to get ownership for the hockey team. You know, they're all, this week, I believe, is when they're going to go and meet with the NHL and pretty much get preliminary approval on everything. I think that's a real positive thing. And so it's good to see that kind of commitment. It's sad to see what happened to the Sonics and the politicians and what they did to it. But now you would figure basketball's 10 years down the line, but they're in a good spot right now to go ahead and get everything going on the other end and get that hockey team in 2020.
Okay. And one last thing. I want to put in a plug-in for October 5th when the Golden State Warriors play Sacramento at Key Arena. It's going to be fun.
Okay.
And if you can't make it to the game, which I will, you can always watch it on ESPN at 7:30.
Okay, that'll be great. It'll be great to see basketball back in town, and it'll be also great to see a pretty good basketball team in Golden State.
Oh, yeah. Thanks a lot, John.
Hey, thank you. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Irish Mankey. Irish Mankey, how are you?
Hello, Mr. Clayton. I'm sorry to hear you're a little bit down in the weather today.
Yeah, a little bit of a cold. Don't know why, but hey.
That's probably all the work you do, Mr. Clayton, and the tremendous amount of stress that you have to deal with. That can wear a man down, Mr. Clayton.
It's a dirty job, but somebody's got to do it.
There you go. And I've got the perfect elixir for you to turn this thing around, Mr. Clayton.
What would that be?
And that is, of course, to watch the Notre Dame game today against Stanford at 4:30. Oh, boy, Mr. Clayton, it's going to be a thriller. And the Irish are going to throw the book at Stanford today, Mr. Clayton.
That's why would they throw a book? I mean, I think it wouldn't be better to have plays and passes and things of that nature as opposed
Mr.
to throwing
Clayton,
a book?
As in Ian Book, the quarterback for Notre Dame.
Mm-hmm.
He's out.
How many have they benched so far this year?
They put him in because he's a better pass. You know, this guy Ian Book, Mr. Clayton, he reminds me a little of Joe Montana. They're both very similar.
He's 50 years old?
No, of course not. But in their football style, they are very similar. You take the time. You don't have to watch the whole game, but watch like just one set of him playing, just so you can file that away in that computer brain of yours down the road when this kid goes to
right.
the booth. He is very good, Mr. Clayton. But
we'll see. This could be a loss.
You want to cure that cold? Watch a little Stanford Irish. It'll do wonders for you.
But well, this could be a loss now. Don't be overconfident about this one.
It could be, but I don't think it will be. This kid is that good. I watched the replay of the Oregon Stanford game and watched how Oregon could have won and should have won and the way they played. And this kid has all those sets and style and plays the same way the Ducks were running against their offense against Stanford. He can do all that stuff. And the difference is he's not going to fumble the ball, Mr. Clayton. Anyway.
Well, so, this could be a tough one.
I on your site, your potential new site, and I logged in for a heads-up notification.
That's good. I'm glad that you did that. Thank you so much for doing that.
Yes, but I have a couple of questions on it real quickly here before I run out of time. The first is, are you going to include in that your writings from the Washington Post?
Yeah, we'll have links to it, sure.
Okay, all right, good. All right, so it'll be, you'll do a whole spectrum of stuff, right, as far as
that's the plan, interviews, and
mm-hmm. Can you give us a little more meat on the bone with regards to the general overview of the site real quick, or are you just...
You'll be seeing that. Well, basically, it's going to kind of do a lot of the stuff that I was responsible for at ESPN.
Okay.
I mean, we're going to focus on trying to get the transactions, react to those, try to get the contracts as far as what people are going to be making, what teams are going to do, get the injury reports, which are big for fantasy, and that, because, you know, David Chow is going to be joining us, at San Diego, Dr. Chow, who is the best in the business at figuring out injuries in football. We got Joel Corey on contracts, Matt Williamson, a former scout of the Steelers, giving you a look at his eyes and what he sees. There'll be stuff, it's news that you can use, and that's what hopefully I provided on all those years at ESPN, and now I'm going to do it for Clayton football.
How about a little bio information and stuff? Maybe some pictures of you through the
years. That's the idea of the launch. The launch, that comes on Monday. That'll be Monday.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, I'm excited. And like I said, check out this kid in book, Mr. Clayton.
I'll be looking for it as Stanford tries to put him on the ground and try to get him behind the line of scrimmage.
But don't worry, it's not happening, Mr. Clayton.
Okay. Iris, thank you so much. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Jeff in Federal Way. Hey, Jeff.
Hey, John. Hey, what do you think of Gardner Minshew so far?
So far, so good. I mean, the fact that, when you think about the whole season, I mean, the defense is better than people thought. You know, the receiving core is about as deep as you're going to find in college football. That's a pretty good receiving core. And Minshew, at least, has got this team, within just one field goal of being undefeated. And that was a tough game that they almost pulled off. So, no, I think that he's been great so far.
No thanks to the Pac-12 refs. But,
no. It's like, but I think we now kind of expect that after all these years.
Yeah. You go down to USC, you know they're going to get the calls. So, but I think this guy, barring injury, this kid is going to put up, some of the best 1-year numbers. The shame is that he couldn't be at Wazoo for 3 or 4 years. If he was, I think this kid could be one of the all-time good ones for Wazoo. I think he's going to. He's got the arm, he's got the smarts, and I think he's hooked in with Leach as far as plan and stuff and carrying it out, the game plan, and he's finding the receiver. He's standing in there, and plus the kid's big and strong, can run the ball. So, yeah, and what do you think of the formation? The snap, the ball snapped, everybody lined up to the left side of the ball and the receiver snapping the ball back. Do you think anything like that?
Yeah, I'm not as big on that, but that's just Leach being creative. That's why it was so important for Leach to, be able to make sure that they keep him there. And, with the athletic director change and all that, that was a concern. But now, he's locked in, and I think it's great for the whole state because, to have Leach in Washington State, they have Chris Peterson here. It's just great for college football.
Well, I think Peterson, if he's smart, he's going to stay there like the dog father. He could be the next dog father at UW. And, I think that's smart. He realizes this is the best he's going to get. This is a great program. Even though I can't stand the Dogs, they are a great program and a great school.
Right.
Just not as good as Wazoo, but, almost.
That's why I say no, just like with David Shaw in Stanford, I see no desire for both Mike Leach to turn pro or for Chris Peterson to turn pro. I think they found what they're good at, and they're staying at it.
Yeah, I just hope the Cougars DBs put on a better game this week, because last week, man, they got burned on those deep balls. That kid just threw the ball up, and they didn't turn and look, and there's all those pass interferences and holdings. Yeah, they got to do a lot better than that if they're going to expect to go.
Well, you know, I don't think the Utah quarterback can exploit that, because I don't think that's the style of quarterback he is. So that deep throw is his game.
Yeah, pressure him to get some sacks. But I just like the creativity of those different formations, just to show him something different. And I just hope something like that makes it to the pros, because I'm just so tired of the old, stale, old game. And I want to see something different, exciting, you know, have a creative coach.
Well, watch the Rams, watch the Eagles, watch Kansas City. Those are the creative things. Hey, Jeff, thank you for the phone call. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN, The John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.